Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, January 26th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a pretty balmy 40 degrees and cloudy and going to be rainy here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Voice Diagnostics, AI, Decision Outsourcing, and Carl Sagan Prophecy. We ended the show reading a quote from Carl Sagan that had talked about a time when science had gotten to the point where it was so complicated that nobody understood it and nobody even desired to understand it. They just wandered around in the darkness and superstition, which, I don't know. I mean, I almost think it's backwards now. The superstition and the mad science is what's happening on the science end of things. But most of the public does not understand the complexities that science is working on right now. They are working on cracking the mysteries of life from every single organism on this planet and trying to discover the secrets as to what makes it tick, finding those chinks in the armor so that we can, quote unquote, cure you. But also, don't forget, everything always has a double-edged sword. We can cure you, but we can also kill you effectively in a million different ways, like paper cuts. Over the last few days, we were looking at AI and medicine. We've actually been doing that for quite a while, but there was a new twist on it because there was some real movement forward in the realm of mental health. Some of the big boys in tech, IBM and Google in particular, IBM and Google, IBM's Watson and Google's whatever. I don't even remember if they have a name for their deep learning AI machine, but they are both working on utilizing voice patterns to diagnose disease, specifically in both cases we looked at mental disease. And good old Tommy Insel, we talked about him so many times. Former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, going over to Google, trying to not only find cures for mental health issues, and who knows what kind of cures, 21st century cures. Of course, there's all kinds of funding now, the 21st Century Cures Act being passed, but also quantitative ways for diagnosis. And that's been a problem for a long time in the psychological realm, is that they have this diagnostic statistical manual, DSM, for diagnosing mental disease. Yet, it's a list of symptoms that then the cure is to take pharmaceuticals. We found out a long time ago that the pharmaceutical companies are actually a big part responsible for writing the DSM. Talk about a fox in the hen house. Like you're going to be trusting these bastards to be coming up with symptoms and, oh, here's a cure. And, you know, we found out for this newest DSM that they had come up with all kinds of new psychological disorders to add. And I think that, I don't remember what they are now. At the time, we had talked about them, but I think one of them was that oppositional defiant disorder. What child doesn't have oppositional defiant disorder? Maybe some kids. I mean, there are some really good kids who just don't argue about anything. But then I hate to tell you, Johnny, those really good kids who don't argue about anything are probably not the type that I was talking about yesterday, the ones that buck the system, the creatives, the ones that question everything, that tend to be the problem people. Wants to question authority from the very early age, that now they have software starting at 3 years old that can diagnose you as to whether or not you're going to be a problem adult. But it's really disturbing that we have gotten to this point now where they're going to be able to read, predict, and then eliminate eventually these traits that make us individuals. You know, a long time ago, I really started to dig into mental health. And I never knew about bipolar disorder, but I had a couple friends that I was pretty sure had some sort of bipolar. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on in their lives, so that can attribute to things. And a family member who is now gone since 1988. He had a bad accident, but he definitely had some sort of chemical imbalance that caused the behavior that we all had to deal with for many years. But the sad fact of the matter is that even if that behavior might be against maybe some of the norms or put others off, they weren't dangerous. They were manic depressive, bipolar, up and down. They would be crazy happy, real excited. Then they'd be really depressed and really down. And then crazy happy, really excited, let's do something, clean my house. And then really depressed. You know, that is not a reason to be A, institutionalizing somebody, B, zippity-zappity-ing their heads, C, giving them some heavy-duty psychotropics that then totally messes them up. Biochemically, for a very long time, if not permanently, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, a listener, Camille, hi Camille, Camille found this show. And Camille was pretty excited she found this show because we deal with a lot of topics that she's been interested in and digging into on her own. And her family's been saying the same things to her. Mine was to me, like, why are you worried about this stuff? So welcome, Camille. I'm so glad you listened. She's been dropping me lots of links. She's doing her own research. But one of the stories she sent me yesterday, and I did try to read it. It was super, super long and it was late, but I got through a lot of it. It talked about the history of psychological experimentation, science, diagnosis, cures, and some of the scientists who were involved. And sure enough, wouldn't you know it, I mentioned it yesterday, the day before, but Operation Paperclip rears its ugly head again. Some of the original scientists, and I don't have the story up right now. It was upstairs. Actually, I had it on my phone last night. I was getting ready to crash out, but two of the main scientists who helped write the DSM and who helped come up with the diagnosis for schizophrenia and came up with the symptoms that are associated with schizophrenia were German doctors that worked under the Nazi regime. And a lot of what they found, I don't know, the article was so long and it was so late, but the gist I got from it is that they were diagnosing people with schizophrenia that didn't necessarily have schizophrenia. And ends up later, they ended up having some sort of encephalitis that was causing these symptoms. But as they were writing the DSM back in those days, they were enumerating these different symptoms that were associated with each disease. And there's really, really good evidence that in the DSM, the symptoms that are now currently associated with schizophrenia are actually symptoms that could have been part of encephalitis infections that were happening at the time in the people that they were observing to come up with the symptoms. And after all these years, the psychiatry community has not done the due diligence to go in and start looking at some of these questionable diagnoses and trying to update potentially what the real symptoms are. So here now we have this 21st century medicine. We have Tammy Insel talking about chucking the DSM out a window because there really are no quantitative analyses that they can use to prove a lot of these diseases, quote unquote, diseases. The author of the article I was reading last night is also saying that there's no test that shows that you have schizophrenia. There's no fMRI. There's no, you know, blood test. There's no protein. There's no marker that shows what the diagnosis is. It's just this list of symptoms that potentially were symptoms of someone being infected with encephalitis and having brain swelling. So it's got to make you wonder, after all these years, you know, we talked about some of the crazy experimentation that happened after World War II, probably even before. I mean, people that were put into mental hospitals had been neglected and tortured and horrifying things done to them for a very long time. You know, when I was digging into this a few days back, did you guys know? I remember hearing about, I think her name was Rose Kennedy. And I didn't know that was JFK's, sister. Except JFK's sister apparently had some problems when she was younger. And they put her into a mental institution. You know what they did? They gave the poor woman a frontal lobotomy. That's why Rose Kennedy was quote unquote disabled. Because they gave her a frontal lobotomy. How horrifying. A member of the Kennedy family got a frontal lobotomy. And I mean, if they did that to a Kennedy, well, imagine what they'd do to a no-name. And they did. Lots and lots of it. It was a petri dish for human pickings, for all kinds of horrifying experimentation that occurred for decades. All in the name of curing you. I've told you guys, this is like medical tyranny is one of those deep, dark, scary nightmares of mine that just gives me chills when I think about it. And this is stuff I get very passionate about because history repeats itself. And I am seeing right now that some of this insanity that is coming through all this remote diagnostics, you know, put on your Fitbit, Jenny. We're going to democratize it all. This should be very frightening to all of us. You know, good old China. China is going to come and help us with this. Hold on. Let me scroll up. I saw two stories yesterday. One was about this new Fitbit that can track your emotions. Seems to be a lot of that going around lately, this emotion tracking ubiquitously 24/7 from all over the place, including from Wi-Fi, bouncing it off your chest. Well, now you got this little armband. This high-tech bracelet can track your emotions throughout the day, and here's how it works. Lowering stress levels and becoming a happier person overall comes down to one major strategy: tracking your emotions and looking for patterns. Ding, ding. Is that not what we've talked about over and over? It's all about the patterns, guys. So AI is getting a handle and being able to bag and tag all of us. And now they are aiming at mental health and the emotions. This is going to be the true lie detector test and the way to see into our psyches is to be able to read what's going on. Remember, also with cameras, robot googly eyes, they're able to read micro expressions as well. Unless you're a really good professional poker player, you probably aren't able to control those very well. So that will give you a way also. I also saw a story last night. They even referred to it as AI ears. I've laughed about that. AI googly eyes and ears, i.e. camera and a microphone. But they're working on these new AI earbuds now that'll give you superhuman hearing, which is pretty nuts. But anyway, back to this. Let's stay here. Reading your emotions. We'll get there. So they want to be able to track your emotions and look for patterns. And this, of course, is going to be your new Fitbit $29.95. Step right up. And China, I think it was China, they came out with a way to make real cheap ones so that everyone could have it. Maybe it was India. Wait, we'll pull it up. All right. So this is what Palo Alto, California-based Sentio believes anyway. And it's built a tool to help you do just that. Track your emotions. Sentio's yet-to-be-released Feel wristband is a discreet wearable device that keeps track of your emotions throughout the day. It's designed to log how you are feeling And with the aid of a mobile app, ding, 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 it help you achieve your, quote, emotional well-being goals. Here is how it works. It comes in four colors. Ha-ha! White, black, turquoise, and fire red. And it is equipped with four sensors on the inside of the band. Those sensors track your IMU, which stands for your movement and activity, as well as your skin temperature, your electrodermal activity, which is what happens to your skin when you sweat, and your heart rate. The company then uses an algorithm, it says, can translate that bio data, pinpointing all the emotions you were feeling throughout the day. Now, I'm going to tell you two things here, guys. This was a little frightening. I brought up, you know, I postulate a lot, but I read a lot. And I told you my Rain Man skill is connecting dots. And so sometimes it almost seems like, I mean, you guys will hear me like go spout off on something today. And 2 days from now, you're going to see a brand new article somewhere that's talking all about whatever I was just postulating. But it's because all this stuff is on the not too distant horizon already. We've covered this from the days that they have been in the laboratory, first experimenting with their research dollars. I mean, we dig it. We get the science. I get all the science journals. We read about them. We read about them on the show. But what got me here, so I was talking the other day, when we were talking about athletes and the 24/7 biomonitoring on athletes that's going on now, being able to bag tag and database it. And I was laughing about how at some point in the near future, they're going to be able to read the sweat and determine whether or not, you know, football Johnny did illicit substances or not, or you know, he's got some issues going on. And absolutely 100%, they can already do that. I postulated they could. I found an article that was talking about reading all the things that could be in your sweat. But another thing that we came up with the other day, I keyworded, coined a term, I so thought, called biodata. Well, nope. I guess that's what they're calling it now. It's biodata, bio-data. And that is your data that can be spliced and diced by an algorithm to determine whether or not you have an illness. But this band is only half the equation. Sentio is also building an app. Yes, good old Dr. Smartphone that pairs with the wristband. And we had postulated this how far back, guys? I can't even believe that this literally is here. 2017 is the year of personal wearables tracking every bit of our bio data. This is what 2017 is about. They are sucking us right into the big pulsing database called Skynet. This band is only half the equation. Sentio, that's a good name too, is also building an app that pairs with the wristband, storing your bio data and syncing it up with your calendar. The company says that this feature helps you better understand what may have triggered your mood, like what you were doing or where you were or who you were with. Like, you know, your puny gray matter can't remember that far in the past as of like the last 24 hours to go, oh, I felt depressed when I was with Johnny. Well, maybe it's because Johnny and I had a big fight. You know, come on. This goes along the lines of the crap we were talking about yesterday with decision outsourcing, with AI telling you when the best time for you to eat or sleep or go to the bathroom is. It's just absolutely ridiculous. This app will also provide you with meditation and breathing exercises and personalized tips based on your data, along with suggestions for how to reduce stress and stay on track with your, quote, emotional well-being goals, unquote. Do you guys really see? I mean, this is coming. Now, like I said, I totally understand that there are times we've all had moments in our lives when we were at rock bottom and everything's gone wrong and the world is totally against us and we can't even prop ourselves up far enough out an elbow to eat because we're so depressed and so crushed over something that happened in our lives. We've all had an instant, a moment like that. I would have to say, I don't think I know anybody who hasn't had something devastating happen in their lives that has taken them into a realm of the deep, dark recesses of depression. And it's a hard road to get back out of there. You know, that downward spiral, even Nine Inch Nails did an album called Down the Spiral. And I think they did another one called Further Down the Spiral. And there might have even been a third one. That was in his heroin days, I believe. But, you know, Down the Spiral is not a good place to be going, because as you're sliding down that slippery slope, the further down you go, the harder it is to get back. And that's where substance abuse and all kinds of bad things that you try to self-medicate with, and not that they're always bad things, but they could be if they get out of control. They take over your life. But, you know, you got to find ways to self-medicate then to produce the happy chemicals in your brain, that dopamine button, maybe some oxytocin or serotonin. But that then takes you even further, because then you become addicted and then you're still stuck and then you can't motivate. So I understand, and a lot of people don't have a confidant, a friend, somebody that's going to be supportive, somebody that's going to be there for them to talk to and work through their problems. I get it, guys. I totally get it. But I am not sure that feeding our data to the machine so the machine can learn. Remember, like, I honestly, I think if there was some sort of Fitbit device that maybe worked non-connectedly to anything, okay, did not exchange your data, did not give someone on the outside world indications as to how you're doing. I mean, this whole privacy thing, we don't want to let them inside. But that it was a tool for you to do biofeedback, start working on yourself, and maybe that's what this is. I don't know. Kind of sounds like it, but we've read much more about these types of tools. A lot of time this is feeding it somewhere to a database. And if you've gone to a doctor, you absolutely know now you are in a database to be monitored. They probably have reported your information to a database somewhere that says you might be a danger to yourself or others. Those pisky. That's how my mother would say it, pisky, with her New Zealand accent, pisky. Those pisky HIPAA laws. Have been brushed out of the way if you are deemed mentally defective. And don't forget, 21st Century Cares Now is giving all kinds of money to get into this. But here's the thing. Don't feed the machine, okay? As you go for help to these people, they're going to want you to interact and to feed this data into their new algorithms. And typically, you should be asking where that data is going. Is that data being fed to the National Institute of Mental Health? Is that data being fed to a group of psychiatrists who are going to use you as a lab rat in their study? You need to understand that every time these nifty little gadgets come online and people jump on board, or they tell you for $29.95 you could swab your DNA and find out who you're related to, or find out what genetic diseases you might be predisposed to. Every time you do that, you have given yourself another entry into this ever-growing database of information about yourself. But don't worry about it, because you know what? What was the sensor called? Sentio. Looks like it's kind of expensive. Well, now they have come out with a paper watch. Quote, unquote, paper watch aims to democratize, there's that word again, fitness trackers. So, hey, if you don't want to track your emotions, don't worry. We're going to track your steps and your health. A paper watch has shown that it can mimic the health monitoring capabilities of smartwatches, such as the Apple Watch, which is like a $300 to $500 unit, or the Samsung Gear at a fraction of the price. And this cheap wearable device combines flexible sensors made from common household items, such as aluminum foil and sponges, with hard silicon-based chip components. Such a hybrid approach could eventually help make cheap, semi-recyclable fitness trackers affordable for practically anyone. Of course, remember I told you before, it's all about the price point for any of this technology. When they want to roll this out to every single one of us and get us connected, that's how they do it. It is price point, people. The big deal, personal computers in the home, was when computers dropped below $1,000. They started calling it the sub $1,000 PC. And that's when the consumer marketplace took off in technology. Well, they learned that a long time ago, and that's the way it's worked now. Don't forget those home robots like Jibo. No, I think that's still having some issues. They have not found the correct price point yet, but that Alexa I have been seeing, it's getting a lot of traction. I've been seeing stories now about people talking about, oh, how they can't live without their Alexa, their personalized AI at home that they can just talk to and ask questions all the time. And Alexa is the personal digital assistant that goes out and finds information for them. And when they're away from home, they miss it so bad because it's so convenient. Yeah, don't give in to the machine. Because remember, something like Alexa is categorizing and databasing everything you ask it and learning your patterns and learning your behavior and learning your voice cadences and probably analyzing you for personality disorders as well as potential illnesses and threats, recording your phone calls as you're on your whatever, or talking to your friends. It's very frightening. We do not want this invasive technology around us 24/7. And, you know, even our cell phones and our computers and anything with a microphone or a camera is probably doing that to us already at any time. I mean, when you installed your application that uses any type of video, even if you don't particularly use video or voice on it, when you've installed that app, you probably agreed to allow permission to that application to at any time record your voice or video or have access to your pictures or have access to your texts or your emails. So they're already on the fly anytime they want for any purpose they want, invading your privacy. But it gets even more invasive as we start now putting these tools on our body. So now they have access to not only the voice and the potential video and your conversations, but they have access to your biostatistics real time, your heart rate, your sweat, your oxygen level, your location, GPS. This watch really resembles more of a paper wristband because its current capabilities don't include telling time. But its inventor at the, and this was pretty interesting, it wasn't China, it was the King Abdullah University of Science and Technology, more affectionately known as KAUST, in Saudi Arabia. And they have packed an impressive array of capabilities into this recyclable fitness tracker. Early testing has shown that it can measure body temperature, sweat levels, heart rate, and blood pressure. And the soft sensor components of the device could eventually be replaced whenever they wear out, even as the customers keep the rigid chip and battery parts of their wearable device. Mohammed Mustafa Hussein, an electrical engineer at KAUST, says, quote, I have a vision about an interface which will enable anyone to go to a pharmacy and buy a disposable sensor and insert it easily into the wristband. This will give it flexibility to innovators and to consumers. An inexpensive wearable device that can constantly monitor a person's fitness signs to detect possible patterns, ding, indicating health or illness, could go a long way toward transforming modern medicine. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. I'm telling you guys, 21st Century Cures Act is going to be about remote monitoring everything and Dr. Smartphone. That's it. That is our not too distant future. It'll all be back-ended to algorithms and some sort of deep learning or AI. And then look out, because as we're bagged and tagged, and this AI gets smarter and smarter, and as more and more people step right up and feed data into the machine, they get more and more accurate, and they find more and more microtells that'll give them additional and more precise diagnoses. Like I said, it's a double-edged sword, because who wouldn't want to know before they get sick, before an illness is incurable, that they have something that potentially they could fix? But on the other hand, who wants to become version 1.0 guinea pig with all these new quote-unquote 21st century cures, flipping switches in your DNA with CRISPR or little robot nanobots in your blood, delivering medicine payloads? I don't know, guys. I wouldn't want to be a 1.0. Like I said, if Microsoft and the history of the Windows operating system is any type of indicator as to how much you should be trusting 1.0 technologies, I would say skip it. Skip it and wait until 2.0, maybe even 3.0. Let all of the bad versions and the very early experimentation be on others, not on yourself. That's why these clinical trials, like we've talked about, the 21st Century Cures Act just got that FDA pretty much out of the way. So they are rubber stamping some of these new technologies without all the due diligence that didn't even protect us to begin with back in the beginning. You know, we still had people dying from bad reactions to medications that the FDA approved. But, you know, now any hope of consumer protections is out a window, all in the name of clinical trials. And a clinical trial is a 1.0, you know, and not even fully out of trials yet, and you're going to step right up and be one of those people that they see what happens when they inject something into your thigh and then put an electrical pulse through there to open up the cell so it can get sucked in. I mean, I read this crazy story. This dude is trying to genetically modify himself. He's chomping at the bit. The FDA was giving him a hard time. He's a scientist, and so he did it on himself without FDA approval. And he had other doctors helping him genetically modify himself, and now he's going to good old Georgie Porgy Church to be evaluated. And Georgie Church is taking notes and watching what's happening to this dude as he's injected these plasmids and had them sucked into his cells. I mean, it's just, we are at a point now where it's crazy. And here is the even crazier part. We have scientists now who are bucking the system because they can't even, with the few little protections that we have with the FDA and now totally out of window with this 21st Century Cures Act, we have scientists, and this isn't the first scientist. I mean, I've seen three now. We had the Russian scientist that injected himself with a 1.2 billion year old bacteria. We had another CEO I think she was CEO of some new longevity company that also injected herself now with this longevity, and maybe they were telomeres or something that were lengthened to see if she could live forever. And now this third dude was putting these plasmids in his leg and getting electro stimulation to open the cells up so they would get sucked into the cell casing. And now he's going to George Church to be monitored to see how his genetic modification of himself is going. You know, this is all outside of any type of regulatory or approval process. And as we have this being democratized across the board, you know, CRISPR technology was democratized. It was sent all over the planet. All these labs have it now everywhere. It's cheap, down and dirty. And they can splice and dice all different kinds of life forms. And it gets even worse. There's new stories about E. coli and genetic modification that maybe we'll get to today, probably tomorrow. But it's gotten to the point where it really is starting to become this Tower of Babel of genetic modification. The letters are getting mixed up now. They can't be read anymore. They just literally, yesterday a story came out that they have now officially created life using those new amino acids that they created, the synthetic ones, and added them to a DNA chain. Now we have A, T, C, G, X, and Y. And X and Y is not male and female. I was talking to a friend the other night. We somehow got on this splicing and dicing genetic modification of humans. And I was talking about ATCG, and I was saying, oh, did you see ATCG X and Y? And he said the exact same thing. He's like, well, what's X and Y got to do with this? And I was like, I knew it. See, that's exactly what they did. They called these new amino acids X and Y to confuse people. They want people to think immediately X and Y, oh, male and female. No, not male and female. They should be called Q and Z. I mean, that's how foreign they are. Q and Z amino acids to create life with six amino acids that have never been seen before in the universe. First life ever. I mean, that's where we are getting to now. They're also talking about creating now the first human embryos and the first humans directly from stem cells. And we discussed that a long time ago, where they were able to take those skin cells, scrape, 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 mix them up in a petri dish, make them pluripotent, turn them into any then type of stem cell so they could fix your kidney or your lung or your brain. That's where those little mini brain balls came from. But we also discovered that then they were able to create, out of that same little pluripotent stem cell, IPS, they were able to create eggs and sperm. Well, now they are talking about creating humans, fertilizing an egg, and creating a human directly from stem cells without human intervention. No. That's a brave new world, guys. That's a very brave new world. All right, back to this disposable paper 24/7 monitor out of King Abdullah University of Science and Technology, invented by Muhammad Mustafa Hussein. An inexpensive wearable device that can constantly monitor a person's fitness signs to detect possible patterns, indicate health or illness, could go a long way toward transforming modern medicine. And it's got to make you wonder, in a society like Saudi Arabia, where the inventor created this, you know, where people like women don't have a lot of rights, makes you wonder if they're not going to use a tool such as this, all women. It's now been edicted that all women need to wear a fitness tracker. You know, we want to make sure that you're healthy. And, you know, no sitting around the house. Don't want you to get a little overweight there. Get moving. Let's put on your fitness tracker. I'm going to start a whole new push to get our population healthy. But in the meantime, they'll be able to track you. They'll be able to put you on a dashboard, like we have discussed, and bag and tag and determine your emotions. I mean, how much is it going to be to put one more little sensor into this disposable device? Guys, this is our future. Understand, this is not going to go away. This is the next 10 to 20 years of economic growth globally, is this new medical invasive tracking, all in the name of keeping you healthy and keeping you safe. But most cheap fitness trackers primarily count your steps and maybe track your sleep patterns. Only high-end wearable devices with price tags ranging from $50 to hundreds of dollars can measure many more health indicators, such as your body temperature, sweat, and heart rate. But by comparison, this prototype of the paper watch costs only $25 right now. And Hussein says that his objective is to reduce the price by $5 a year so that in the next 5 years, literally everyone can have one. Yeah, like I said, they will become mandatory. This isn't going to be a voluntary thing. When they're cheap enough that everyone can have one, it's going to be like an RFID tag. on inventory today. RFID tags used to be really expensive back when I was a tech in that day. We first started learning about RFID, and they were experimenting with it in the lab. And they were trying to use it for inventory, real-time inventory, being able to scan from way up high above in something like a shipping yard to get real-time counts as to what's in containers and what's, you know, even on grocery store shelves. This has been going on for a long time. But they weren't sure that RFID would ever come down in price to even make it an option. But it has. They're pennies now. Pennies a piece now. And RFID is on all kinds of things. And they're probably putting it on more every day. But this is going to be just like that. And we're going to be the product. And they're going to be able to detect way more than just whether or not we're here. Because they can do that already with your digital devices. This is going to be able to pull all your information and determine what is going on at the very second that they want to know within your person. So I don't know if I want to read any more about that. So anyway, last but not least, this current paper watch prototype is being tested with software developed by who? So we got the Saudis, and the software is developed by the Chinese Academy of Sciences. Oh, now that would be a scary team up now, wouldn't it? Very rich on both ends of the spectrum, the Saudis and the Chinese. Two populations that I'm sure the governments of those countries would like to monitor very closely, at least certain components of it. But the Saudi and the Chinese are working together on this paper wristwatch. Chinese Academy of Sciences wrote the software and would be able to pair their software for this paper tracker with smartphones of the future for customers. Hussein and his colleagues hope to eventually spin off a company focused on providing healthcare monitors for, yes, a big growing population, and that would be the elderly, starting sometime in 2017. And in the process, they may even add timekeeping capabilities to make their device a true, quote unquote, paper watch. You know, talking about the elderly, I saw, and I'm kind of getting a little off track, but that's okay because we've been talking about AI and tracking, bagging, tagging, including robots. Remember, we're going to have the software versus the tin cans. There was a story about these new robots coming out for the elderly. And if I can find it. Here it is. Seniors welcome their new battery-powered friends. That's what its title is. It's out of the New York Times, even. Welcoming a robot into her family was never Maxine Duncan's idea of a support aide in her older years. If anyone saw a robot, that reminds me of the grandma who got the robot and she didn't want him, and then he went bad. But this winter, she and her partner, Herbert Yarlbro, signed up to test a telepresence robot in their retirement community, the Heritage Downtown in Walnut Creek, California. Their new pal has a screen for a head and scuttles around on wheels, and the lure was being able to connect more easily with their family via video calls, of course. The couple was immediately smitten, and they've named their robot, yes, they have anthropomorphized him, they have named their robot Jimmy. So it's not Johnny, it's Jimmy. Jimmy the robot. It's an easy name to remember, says Ms. Duncan, 86, a former real estate broker. And Mr. Yarlbro, 89, takes the robot on the elevator to help him pick up breakfast downstairs. We want to keep up on technology, says Ms. Duncan, who covets a self-driving car.
A lot of older people are isolated from people and new ideas. And now we're on the cutting edge, she says. Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons has arrived. How many times have we talked about the Jetsons? We're there, people. Early adopters like Mrs. Duncan are on the front lines of testing new technologies that some experts say are set to upend a few of the constants of retirement. Eager not to be left behind, retirement communities are increasingly serving as testing grounds that vet the winners and the losers. Some simple robots that can help older adults are already mass market, like Amazon's personal assistant Alexa. Ding, ding. Talked about Alexa today. Other inventions such as virtual reality technologies and robotic limbs are still in their early days, but could soon provide more freedom, resources, and constant care to retirees. And I was just thinking, could you imagine like Super Grandma in an exoskeleton? That would be really, I don't know. I couldn't even imagine that. Robo Grandma. I mean, what kind of a crazy world is this going to be by the time we're in our 80s? I just can't even imagine. Some technologists see the most promise in the social dimensions. For too long, technology has been chasing problems rather than trying to delight human beings. And where are the devices that help us learn and expand our horizons? So virtual reality, for example, can entertain, engage, and educate us. And it is for young and old alike. Yeah, virtual reality is coming to suck your brain out of your eyeballs, is what I say. And it's enjoyed, not needed. And that's your high ground. These devices will be especially helpful in augmenting the adult child's caregiver role. Thuk Vu, co-founder of Homni, spelled O-H-M-N-I, Labs, Homni Labs, helped invent a robot, Homni, that is now Ms. Duncan and Mr. Yarbrough's companion. Dr. Vu, who has a PhD in computer science from Stanford, sees consumer robotics as the next big wave in technology. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. There is a huge senior population, but isolation and loneliness are still common, and depression, I'm sure. And we are also running out of caregivers, as most of them are getting older. The Homni robot was designed with the techno-adverse in mind, like you and me, and all these old people who just don't get it, and requires limited computer knowledge. Remember, I told you it was all about getting us to trust them. Trust the robots. It's my best friend. Doodle-doodle-doodle-doo. It's my best. This is what they're doing. Trust us. Let us in. Let us in. Interact. Teach us as we help you. This is what it's all about. It is connected to Wi-Fi and operates remotely. And in its next iteration, the company is working on training the robot to pick up objects. And in 5 years, it'll be able to wash dishes, do laundry, and clean your house, says Dr. Vu. This year, Homni Labs robots will be offered by a consumer health firm called Home Care Assistance to retirement communities and people in aging communities. And the yearly cost is about 20% of the cost on an average of hiring a full-time caregiver, according to Lily Safran, chief executive of Home Care Assistance. In 5 to 7 years, caregiving will shift and a lot of home automation will become more mainstream. And guys, if you are looking for a new career, I was just discussing this last night, I would say robotics and home automation, smart homes, smart environmental controls on buildings, as well as smart buildings, would probably be a good industry if you're looking for a career change. Digital health means more attention to senior care. So they're going to call it digital health. Who is an active tech investor and a mentor at StartX. Otherwise, aging would be a huge challenge. Brookdale Senior Living, which has over 1,000 residential communities, is also aggressively testing this new technology, and its entrepreneur in residence program invites startups into its communities for short stays to test their new gadgets on the residents. This includes smart medication devices, virtual reality, and family connection apps. Older adults at Brookdale are eager to offer feedback. And this technology will change the way people age in America. And yeah, is that not a foreboding sentence? It is going to drive every dimension of health or social isolation out of the way. And nursing homes were once a place where you were going to die. And now you can have your little robots. Virtual reality rejuvenated life for Abdus Sakur, 67, who lives in Brookdale residence in Quincy, Mass. He is a classically trained chef, and Mr. Sakur opted to take a virtual trip to a Creole restaurant in Berlin where he once worked. And by wearing the VR headset, he could check out their current menu and look at the restaurant's colorful redesign. Mr. Sakur also took virtual trips to the beaches of the Caribbean where he felt the sand under his feet and saw schools of fish under the water. Well, that does sound kind of cool now, doesn't it? But look out, because they're sucking you into the Matrix. I mean, think about, we had Zuckerberg that's really kind of rolling out all kinds of VR stuff. I just saw now they're working on some VR goggles that can also be mind controlled. So they'll be taking like fMRI readings or EEG readings from your brain while you have these VR eye goggles on and headset. And it's got to really make you think when you look at that dangling dopamine carrot and how people get sucked into the machine, they get sucked into video games, they get sucked into their devices. Take that one step further with VR where they can put on goggles and now they are like fully immersed in this alter reality. Not only can they see and hear, but they just said Mr. Sakur could literally feel the sand under his feet. Nobody's going to want to come out of that matrix. They're going to go in there and it's going to be a real happy place. They could go, you know, to a place they once worked, to a place they loved. Maybe they could even see their old girlfriend, their one true love that they lost at 22 years old. I mean, people are going to be going in there like a cocoon, a happy place, and not ever wanting to come out, not paying attention to what is going on in the outside world because it won't matter anymore. This is where this is leading us. And while we get sucked into the machine, completely losing grip with this ugly, dirty, depressing world that they have created for us here, it's just going to push us even further into the machine. And then they'll be able to do whatever they want on this end because none of us will be paying attention. They'll be able to manipulate and control and push some buttons and zap you above your ear, bzz, 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 create new chemicals. I mean, then none of this is science fiction anymore. None of it. Absolutely none of it. We have bagged, tagged, and tracked. We have from the beginning. And the developments of these technologies to the point now where they have been commercialized, they are all rolling out. 2017 is the year of connecting humanity to the big pulsating brain of the future. This is it, people. This is how it's happening. And they hit the price point. They're rolling it out. They're getting the old people. They're going to get the old people to use it to communicate with their loved ones and to show their loved ones that it's a caregiver, it can take care of them, which in turn will convince their family, i.e. a younger generation, that robots are good. Look, robots can do good things for us. We should trust them. VR is good. Look, it can make grandpa happy. It's a psyop. It's a total psyop. It's a dangling carrot. They want you to be like the little mousie that follows it into the have a heart chap with the big chunk of peanut butter on the other ends. Careful what you ask for. If you think you need to be taken care of by somebody, and it seems too good to be true, and it's this wondrous new thing that's going to help, there's always got to be some sort of paying the piper. And the paying the piper is that you're losing your autonomy. You're giving up your data, your biostats, your behavior, your interactions, and they're using it all for research. And as they gain more research and they feed it into the machine gets smarter. And as the machine gets smarter than all humans. And as it gets smarter than all humans, we end up having puny human brains. Because our brains will need to be augmented so we can even compete with the robots of the future, with the AI of the future. What happens? Let's look throughout history. When a more advanced, quote-unquote, race comes into contact with a less advanced race, well, typically, they either enslave them or pillage them and steal it all. Careful what you ask for. Careful what you feed the machine. All right, so I did not cover anything at all that I wanted to cover today. We got about a minute and a half here. So what are we going to do? Well, China is doubling down on AI. And we just found out we got China and Saudi Arabia collaborating on some of these new wearables. The country, China's internet giants, are all focusing on AI research, and domestic venture capital funding is pouring into the field. We've talked about Baidu, that is the Chinese equivalent of Google, and there was an individual from Google that went over to Baidu, one of their big AI people I just saw a few days ago, that now Baidu has managed to get themselves a very high-end AI engineer from Microsoft now to come over as well. So they got two biggies working over in the Chinese Google, already making serious headway in AI research. Baidu has now announced that former Microsoft executive Ke Liu is going to be taking over as chief operating officer of Baidu. Look out, guys. All right, make sure you stick around. It's Thursday. Hi.